everybody. Welcome back to Classical Guitar Insider. This is your host, Brett Williams, and today on the show, it's Connie Hsu, an old friend of mine and an outstanding guitarist who's visiting us from California. And if you remember the last couple of episodes, I've kind of referred to this interview that I did that I thought I totally, you know, totally fucked up. And it turns out I didn't. I listened to it again, and I wasn't, you know, on top of my game. I was sort of, I don't think I asked the right questions, but, you know, we got into it. It was friendly, and it was light, and I think it was quite charming. But I was, for whatever reason, very self-conscious about this interview, and I've done a whole bunch of these, but she didn't throw me off my game at all. She's perfectly charming, and you'll find that out, but it's just... I don't know. I just felt like I wasn't present in the moment. I don't know if something was happening. This was back in November. This whole thing happened. So I've been referring to it as the worst performance that I have ever given as an interviewer. So let me just switch this to time. Just doing some logic stuff with my recording equipment. Anyway. She came in, we had a good time. I hope you guys liked the interview as much as I did. It turns out I enjoy this interview. I enjoy it very much. So it's short, it's concise, but you know, we cover a lot. She has a lot going for her. She is performing primarily the music of female composers at this point. She's in a great duo, and she is the general manager of the Guitar Foundation of America. So there's a lot to talk about there. There's a lot that you'll want to listen to. And she's also an educator. And, you know, and we go into that, into sort of the different things we have to do to survive as guitarists. But the show is sponsored by a guitarist who is surviving very well. Mr. Simon Powis is over there at Classical Guitar Corner. And he is sponsoring the show and can give you guitar lessons on the, over the internet. Meaning that you don't have to come here and smell my coffee breath. Or you don't have to go to, you know, whoever's house and smell theirs. And I stand by this. I think coffee breath is bullshit. I think that you're not smelling the coffee. You're smelling the sugar and milk that people are soaking their teeth in. The coffee's fine. The coffee is, you know, sort of doesn't have that. It just sort of smells like chocolate a little bit. It doesn't, you know, if you don't like the smell of chocolate, then you, I can't help you. You probably shouldn't be around people. But... you know, as far as going into somebody's house and having to smell their coffee breath or having them, you know how sometimes your teacher has to move your fingers around instead of using his words? You don't have to deal with that either. Nothing. Simon can't reach out over cyberspace and give you an uncomfortable massage, even though you may want him to. He's an awfully handsome guy. But just go over there. And have Simon give you a hands-free guitar lesson. Great voice, great presence, at a great price. Classical Guitar Corner. Don't get a massage. You're not in your guitar lesson for a massage. You need to stay focused. Okay? So no old 40-year-old men with coffee breath, you know, making you uncomfortable. That's, you don't have to deal with that. ClassicalGuitarCorner.com, also sponsored by SavageClassical.com. As always, we are forever grateful to Richard Sage at Savage Classical for sponsoring the show for 3 years, upwards of 3 years now. You can go to Bayshore, New York on Long Island and try the guitar yourself, or you can have it sent to you, and you can return it for free if you think the thing's a piece of shit. All right, so that's what's going on sponsor-wise. You know, we're always sponsored by audibletrial.com/insider. Free audiobook download of your choice, 30-day free trial on us. And by us, I mean me. I'm all alone. I have been composing a lot when I'm not bartending and becoming better at that, which I like, the bartending. It's okay. It's physical, but I'm starting to get used to it. It's good. I need that. You know, I'm rolling solo right now. I gotta keep things tight. But So I gotta, you know, I'm doing that, and it's been good. The kids are off; they're out of school. It's a winter break right now. I've had the week to really focus. I wrote that one piece I told you guys about last time. But I got a little question to pose to my composer friends today. The first piece I wrote was this slow melodramatic piece about my, you know, breakup or whatever. And I'm, you know, that's obviously where I needed to go. You know, I needed just time with my guitar to do what I want to do. And generally when I pick up the guitar, that's kind of where I gravitate towards. And I think that goes for a lot of us. We sort of, you know, I always use the word melisma to describe a lot of guitar compositions out there, modern guitar compositions. And it's something that should be dosed as frequently into your repertoire, into your original composition repertoire, as much as you got to just do it. I know it's a pain in the ass, but you got to do the fast stuff. You got to do the dances, the stuff that moves, or you're going to lose your audience. At least you're going to lose me. All right. I want to see you up there working, kid. And when I'm composing those pieces, it's challenging for the obvious reason of the fact that you're, you know, you have to just write more notes, you know. By the time I'm done with the A section, it's what, you know, 90 seconds has passed, and I've written twice as much as I wrote when I was writing the slow piece. But my issue is sort of, I guess, when it comes to form. All right? For those of you who aren't musicians, I apologize. But maybe you can keep up. Let me explain what I mean by form. I mean that you basically, when you're writing a classical piece of music, a lot of pop is basically, I mean, you could say it's binary, meaning that there's one section, there's another section. It's usually rounded binary. There's like a, you know, beginning, and then there's a middle where it gets a little wild, and then it kind of goes back down to the beginning, right? So that goes ABA. Now, my issue is that when I'm writing a fast piece, the material develops so quickly and moves through the various, you know, things that a slow piece would move through very quickly. So I'm really tempted to go into a B section with a completely other piece. Whereas the B section of a slow piece is more, it's related just by virtue of not having to produce as much material. I'm having a problem. What is there a way that you guys do it? Do you guys approach a fast piece with the form first? In other words, you know you're going to write a rondo or something. I don't know. Like, how do you do it? How do you go about composers writing a quick piece? A quick idiomatic, virtuosic piece that plays to your strengths. But more importantly, formally, how does that work? Do you just kind of let it go like a prelude where nothing's really repeated? Do you do rounded binary? One of the things that I do when I have trouble with these compositions is the development section. But the development section is, for those of you who aren't musicians, is that's the part where you take, let's just, for lack of getting too into it, just the melody. There's other things you can take, but let's say you take the melody or a rhythm that's present at the beginning of the piece. And then you take it, you work it, you kind of play it a little differently, right? So what you do is you end up in a completely different key during this section. And then you got to kind of work your way back to your home key. So that you're there by the time you get to your recapitulation, which is a sort of a presentation of the beginning of the piece again. I know I'm losing some of you, but I'm having a hard time with that. It's because it seems like what I do is I just always do the same fucking thing every time I compose a fast piece. I do a quick, very fun, very inspiring sort of thing happens in the beginning, and then it goes into a sort of a, maybe a quiet or a slow section in a relative key. And then I go back. That's it. That's a wrap. I don't know how long I should let developments go. I guess my big question is, do I assert the form of the piece before I compose the piece? when I'm doing a relatively short, quick movement. Does this make sense? Not movement, but, you know, piece. Does this make sense, composers? Do you guys have the same issues? If you guys have the same issues composing quick pieces, and I know you do, because there's not enough of them, there's not that many quick tonal pieces out there for that are written that are new. All right. Roland Dean's had a couple. God rest. That's a guy we're all going to miss. I don't know why I've been thinking about him a lot lately. Maybe it's because I'm composing. Anyway, let's get on with the show. This is my time, but that was a little bit of, it wasn't meant to be a rant. It was meant to be a question, but I guess I didn't know what question I want to ask. Just basically write in and tell me how you write a fast piece. All right. I don't want to have to go back to school. I don't have the money. I'm just paying on the interest right now of my student loans, and I'm 41. I'm not going to go ask more questions. I'm not going to go pay to ask more questions. Just give them to me for free. And become a member. Become a member of this show. You go to BrettWilliamsMusic.com, and you donate $5 a month. It's right there on the right-hand side of the page for any of the sub-pages. Go to the podcast section of BrettWilliamsMusic.com. And become a member today. If you become a member, it does a lot of things. First of all, you're going to get exclusive content eventually. Once there is enough members, I don't know. If you are a member, go, hey, where's that exclusive content? And I'll send you some. I'll send you a CD, I guess. I don't want to do that. Please don't make me go to the mailbox. I'll send you some MP3s. There'll be exclusive content for members in the near future. And it makes us look good. It makes the whole show really shine when there's a community around it. And I really do want to create a community around the show more. And I think with members, there's going to be probably, if we get enough of them, there'll be maybe some meetups and all sorts of stuff. I think it'll be a fun thing. All right. So go to BrettWilliamsMusic.com and become a member today. It's only $5 a month. And then you can do it for a couple of months, and if you're like, ugh, I've just had it with this guy, please don't worry about it. You could pull out at any time. All right? Here's my time with this great person, guitarist, and administrator, Connie Shue. But it's not really a studio.
In my home, yeah, it's a room. It's called a studio. Sounds more important that way.
That's what I do.
I like it, yeah. It's like my happy place.
I try to be a little better because people come in here sometimes and be like, oh, this is an apartment. In the beginning, now everybody knows what a podcast is, so it's great. Like, yeah. You guys know what you're doing. You know you're going to be among bikes and trash cans and stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's fine.
So you got the studio in your apartment. You teach there.
In my house, yeah.
And what are you doing out there right now? Are you a professor? Are you?
No, well, I mean, I have like 3 part-time jobs.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like any guitarist has to at least do a couple of different things to make ends meet and all that. So I teach at the Pasadena Conservatory of Music. I've been there a long time now. I've been there ever since maybe like 2008.
Yeah.
And I do a combination of like Suzuki teaching and, you know, a lot of my students have stayed all through, you know, till they graduate high school. So I've seen some really great students, you know, go off to college, and that's a good feeling, you know, when you've taught somebody for 7-8 years,
you
see them grow up.
I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
Cause we're the same, technically the same generation of guitarists.
Right.
We were
in school at the same time.
We were in school at the same time. We did a concert together.
I was. Quartet, yes.
I was in it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, we'll talk about that.
That was eons ago, yeah.
But the most important thing, though, is that I've been working at the school I work at now, which I don't want to talk about on air just because I'm such a crass weirdo. I don't want that to. The people that know about it that are at the school are good. They're like you said; these families, you get super close with them. You know, they're lovely people.
Right.
It could be used against me, I'm sure.
Sure.
But as far as you got me that job, or you got Giacomo that job, and Giacomo brought me, and I've been there for 10 years.
Oh my gosh! I'm so glad you guys are still at it.
Can you believe it?
Yeah, it was a good place to work.
Good pay.
Really, really good place to
Jonathan
work.
Jonathan is just probably the best boss I've ever had.
Oh yeah, he's such a great guy. I miss him. Yeah,
he really knows how to balance. You know, and this is a thing for bosses, is like balancing, what you give to the parent, which should be as much as possible.
Yeah,
it's part of the job. Half the job.
Yeah,
is dealing with parents, talking to parents, creating relationships with parents, making yourself like parents.
Right. Which is hard when you're not a parent, I think.
Now that you're a parent, is it easier to talk to the parents?
It actually is. It is because I kind of feel where they're coming from a lot of the time. And my kids are not that old. They're 6 and 4. But, you know, I can sense the anxiety raising kids in this world now and just how important they think everything is about their kids' lives. And
everything's
and
important. It is important to them. And it is. And the thing is that that's interesting too. I mean, I found with age, I like them more.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I'm in my 20s and I just want
to. Yeah. And you feel like you have no authority to speak to them.
You don't really have authority to speak to them. And they don't really want you to speak to them. Cause they're like, who is this?
Why
and
do you matter?
Who's this little artist? But yeah, so I like them more now. I'm connecting with them, I guess. I don't know. I'm all right. I've always liked the ones I've liked, and I don't like the ones I don't like. But you're finding that sort of anxiety and sort of the frugality sometimes. They're just kind of like, I'm paying for these lessons, and I expect certain things. How do you deal with that?
I have to say, we don't get that as much in our program. So
you get real people.
We get, like, people who really value the arts and who... We make them come twice a week to the school. They do a private lesson and a group lesson every week. And so it kind of filters out a lot of people. You know, folks aren't going to commit to that kind of thing unless they are really serious about music education. Yeah. And so the students that we do get really get into this community. They make friends. The parents know each other. We've taken them on trips before. That really bonds people. And then, yeah, we've got 5 guitar teachers, like all strict classical guitar. And probably like about 80 students.
That's great.
Yeah.
And I mean, but that's like kind of your primary teaching gig.
Right. So I'm there 2 or 3 days a week. And then, I also teach out in Riverside County at Moreno Valley College. That's kind of a newer job for me. I teach out with a guy named Barry McNaughton, and, it's a bit of a haul. It's like an hour 20 drive, but I'm just there one day a week. And then I do like 6 students back to back, then I'm out.
Is that like north? Is that like north Los Angeles?
It's like east. It's northeast. Like way east.
Riverside. We're University of River. Or
past Cal Riverside. State. Yeah. Past Riverside.
It's past that.
Yeah. So it's like halfway to the desert, really. Like driving to a foreign land. Like the landscape changes.
Where do you live?
I live in LA proper. So I live halfway between downtown and Pasadena, an area called Mount Washington Highland Park.
Highland Park.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of Highland Park. I need to go out there and really explore.
Yeah.
That would be a great vacation for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm from there. We're both from there. Are you from San Jose?
Yeah. Where are you from?
Stockton.
Oh, that's right.
It's just been so long. Like we said, it has literally been, so that would be 2005. So that's 12 years.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I can't believe we're still doing any of this, but I guess... Well, the reason I brought up this stuff, I want to get back to what it's like. How is that commute? I mean, what's that like?
It's actually against traffic, so I'm flying. I'm driving 70 miles.
So it's an hour and a half, but it's an hour and a half. It's not, you're never sitting there
like
for 2 hours.
Like an hour 20 going out because there's not traffic in the morning, and then I come back, there's a little more traffic.
It feels so different here, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So much quicker.
Yeah.
Because some things take like an hour and a half, but when I think about an hour and a half in a car, I go like, I don't know.
I know.
But here, like, I'm just sitting on Subway. I mean, it's equally as upsetting.
Yeah, yeah, it can be.
It sure can. As far as, you know, one of the reasons I brought up the fact that we're both the same generation is that I think a lot of us now are doing this. Like, this is what we do primarily. We give a couple of concerts a year.
Mm-hmm.
And you do have a very good schedule. You still have a great concert schedule. Like, you're still out there, you're still shaking, you're still coming out with new projects.
I'm trying, yeah.
But you are also like,
you gotta make a
living. Yeah. And the living is coming out of, obviously the concerts are contributing to it, but we're depending heavily on becoming teachers of children.
Right. Teachers of children.
Which is not necessarily what we thought we were going to be.
Yeah. I mean, I guess mine's a combination now. I don't have as many young kids now that I've been at the school for like 8 years. A lot of my students are more high school age. And then community college teaching, you get community college age students. So, so it's a combination of those things.
How's a community college? How is that?
It's
how many students?
It's really different. I just got 6 there. but it's about 6 hours of teaching.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like,
but they're guitar majors.
They're guitar majors. Yeah.
Oh, see, I've never experienced that. And yeah. That's how, so this is I mean, you've probably done some stuff here and there, but is this your first experience really being a guitar professor?
Yeah. Yeah. And,
well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
It's good. I mean, I feel like it's like most of the job is really also being a mentor, because yeah. I don't know, maybe there's just something about me. People like to tell me stuff, and I get a lot of, you know, people just telling me about life.
Yeah.
And actually, that's the best part. I would rather talk to somebody about life than I'll teach technique too, but. And yeah, I file a lot of nails, you know.
You do?
I file a lot of nails.
I remember because I went to a junior college, and my teacher, I will never forget when he was sitting there filing my nails for the first time.
Right, right. And for some people, that's like highly uncomfortable. And I don't know.
You got to do it.
Now I'm just like, hey, hand it over. Let me at your right hand here, because like, that's not sounding good.
Yeah, no, it's not. Enough. You've had your chance.
Yeah.
Mr. Pointy Nails.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly true. That's our secret. That's our little, I mean, it's not our secret, but it's something that, you know, I try to explain it when I teach in home, mm-hmm. as I try to say, like, especially when, you know, me and the kid are getting closer, I'm like, look, you're going to hear us talk about just not guitar.
Right, right.
And some parents are like, is he focusing? And I have to be like, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
I'll give him one chance to get on board. I'll say like, well, you know, it's kind of part of the whole thing. Like, you know, being a teacher is the most important thing you can do is build relationships.
Yeah, it's all about that. Yeah.
I've heard that from the pros
yeah.
and from principals and from everybody. They're like, number one is build the relationship.
Yeah.
You know, and then ask. And then or have seven good, you know, interactions or positive interactions before you ask for anything that may cause a negative interaction.
Yeah.
These kinds of techniques. But we're supposed to go in there just like run and gun.
Right, right.
For a half an hour.
Yeah.
And the kid's supposed to react well. And even, junior college, they're children. I mean, they're still kids. They're still living at home. They're still,
yeah, you know. A lot of them. And actually a lot of my students, like, you know, they're incredible. They put themselves through school. They work,
yep.
you know, side jobs and all that. And, so I have a lot of respect for that, and just the whole, you know, putting yourself through it, trying to better yourself through your education and
stuff. Are a lot of them trying to like catch up, kind of like, you know, like maybe didn't read that much music. I know that was me.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of them are, you know, they're trying to improve their sight reading and a lot of just fundamental technique. And they have high hopes of transferring somewhere else, where like a state school with a good guitar program or a UC or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is your first year there.
This is my first year there. Yeah. So I started last spring, and so it's my second semester.
I think that's going to be really exciting when you see like a hot shot, you know, get into,
yeah,
you know, a good school or something.
Yeah.
You're like, that's my kid.
Yeah, exactly.
I started that.
Yeah, that's a good feeling.
That's a good feeling. And you said that you've had that happen with some of the kids? You've had some kids go off and be music majors?
Actually, yeah. One of my students was there on Friday night. She's at MSM now. And she started with me when she was like 8 years old. And
here?
Yeah, she's a freshman at MSM.
What is her name?
It's pretty cool. Mackenzie Mendez.
But she was not a Rodef kid.
Oh, no, not a Rodef kid. She started with me in Pasadena.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. That's so great.
Yeah. So, and then I've had one of my students went to Cal State Fullerton to study with Martha Masters. And, you know, so I've had a couple kids that have like really taken guitar seriously and said, I want to be a music major. So take me through the audition process. And I love that. That's like so exciting to me, like, to be able to be like, okay, this is what you're going to play. This is improve it this way and that way. And we talk about nerves, we talk about performance and, you know, all those things that go into it. So,
I mean, as far as like that's, so when you're preparing somebody for that, that's a lot of what it is like you're getting nervous.
Right, right.
And make sure you play for your friends.
Yeah.
Make sure you're playing every day.
Yeah, you talk about, I don't know, especially with, obviously I connect a lot with the girls that, you know, I don't know, self-esteem is a huge thing. Confidence is a big issue. If you're performing, you have to like go through all that stuff and process it with somebody.
Yeah.
So.
And so that's one of the things that you go, because that's not something that I think I received in my junior recital, as I've said several times, was just so frightening.
Oh, yeah. It can be really scary, especially the guitar is such a vulnerable instrument, you know?
Yeah.
And you're usually playing memorized. You don't have like a pianist covering you up. And you're just there.
Yeah.
It's really like soul bearing. Kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy that we do this.
It's crazy. And it doesn't get easier. It just gets hard. That part of it gets harder.
Yeah.
For me.
It can. Yeah. Definitely can.
What method book do you use for your adult beginners?
I've used the Node book, the Parkening book, a mishmash of things. You know, it really depends on the student and where they're at. And
I've never seen the Parkening book.
It's good for, you know, like learning first position and on.
It's got pretty songs.
Strings.
Yeah.
And it just takes you through really sequentially. And then at the end of the book, by the time they're reading all of first position, basically, then it starts to get a little more complex. But from there, usually the student is ready to branch out because they've kind of got the basics of reading down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's cool. So, yeah. I mean, because that's what I would assume that that's like, because that's a big thing for them is reading. Like,
yeah.
That's what they want to do. That's almost, it's a little bit why they're there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, in the first place. So
yeah.
You're dealing with that. And but as far as the technique is concerned, you're doing what you, I mean, you have to restart them on that too, obviously.
Right.
In a lot of cases. A lot of them are finger style or.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so then pickers. We talk a lot about, you see a lot of thumb over the neck on the left hand or wrists turning in strange positions on the right hand. Well, strange only because, you know, I'm pretty straight classical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of girl. So, but yeah. And then using nails, that's a whole nother ball game.
And you were talking about, I'm sort of jumping around on different parts of what you were talking about, but you also talked about the element of being confident as a female on stage. And is that something that you, because you were around when there weren't necessarily that, there, it seemed like there was not as many as there are now.
Yeah. And even, I mean, I think
even now there's,
with younger kids, there's starting to be more girls that take up guitar seriously.
Yeah.
But when I was a student, I always felt like the first thing I did when I got to a guitar festival or a camp or a new program was like count the number of girls that I could be buddies with, you know,
because
I was always like in this sea of guys, of dudes, like who, you know, of course you relate, you're friendly, whatever, but it's not really the same.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, you're the girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there's a girl here. Everybody. Yeah. And they're all a bunch of nerds. So they're like really hard.
With totally. Girls.
Then you got to be the girl with the nerds who've never seen a girl before. That's not true. You guys are great. But, you know, yeah, that's got to be something. Yeah. But you were always so confident on stage and you projected well. You played loud. I see that with a lot of, or I saw that with a lot of female players back then, is they would really project.
Yeah. Well, I had some strong role models, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, my teacher in high school, Sharon Wayne, was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's just a super expressive, beautiful player. And then, when I was at Columbia for undergrad, Antigone Goni started teaching there.
Who's another just strong.
She's amazing. Yeah. She's
vibrant,
a just huge, powerful sound.
Life.
And I was just like, wow, you know,
yeah.
I want to sound
with
like
the hair.
That. Yeah. Yeah. She's amazing.
She is. She's so cool.
Yeah.
I want a beer. She's like Wonder Woman.
Totally. I just saw that on the plane, actually.
She kind of acts like I could see her as Wonder Woman.
Me too.
Yeah.
I'll tell her you said that.
Yeah, tell her I said that. Tell her Brett said she's been on the show. Tell her Brett.
Oh, really?
Remind her of who I am,
which
she probably has forgotten. But just tell her that the guy from the radio show said she's like Wonder Woman.
Okay.
She'll know what you're talking about. So you see her often. You kind of get around, right?
Well, I don't see her. I haven't seen her in a number of years because she lives in Europe now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about the duo. You know, you were a soloist. You have two solo albums that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
And what's like what brought you into the duo? Like what piqued your interest? Have you always wanted to be in a duo?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've always loved chamber music. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I played cello also when I was growing up, and probably in college I almost played more cello than guitar. And I loved playing. I played in a string quartet and orchestra and. I just like that communal element so much.
Yeah,
I mean,
me
I kind of fell into solo playing with guitar just because
that's
all there is, you know, initially. That's where we all think the repertoire is, and that's what you're trained to do in school.
Mm-hmm.
And so guitar chamber music had always been this almost like a mystery. Like, oh, it seems really fun, and I like the LAGQ, and I want to play with other people. But, you know, you really have to be the right match, I guess. You have to have the same ideas about what you want to play, and sound wise, you have to sort of be a good combination. And so my duo partner and I, Adam Pettit, we work at the same place. And so, we just started playing some faculty concerts together once in a while. And then eventually we got invited to do like a whole concert on a Guitar Society series in the area. And so we were like, oh, I guess we should get some repertoire together. And then it just kind of spun out from there. And we found that we're a pretty good match in terms of the type of repertoire we like. And, you know, we're kind of about trying to dig up new music, stuff that's not being played a whole lot.
Yeah.
Or, you know, getting composers to write for us, which we're just kind of starting to get our feet wet.
You don't know what you're going to get. You don't know.
Right. You don't know what you're going to get. That's the thing. Oh, man.
You don't know what you're going to get. Yeah. That's what I used to say when people, because when Giacomo and I were in a duo, we were kind of getting stronger and more and more concerts. And then people would start, like a couple of friends, especially because back then when you're younger, you know, the people are still composing that you went to school with. Mm-hmm. And they haven't, you know, gone into law yet or anything like that. So they're always like, I'm going to write a piece for you. And I was always like, that sounds really good. I can't guarantee you we're going to play it.
Yeah. We have to like it first.
It has to be like playable to a degree. I don't want to have to like, you know, practice a new technique that you came up with in your, you know, bathroom one day. You know, because that's part of our problem, I think. Yeah. We're constantly tackling these new techniques, right?
Yeah.
And then also there's stuff that, a good composer can write something that you're like, this isn't on our program right now. Mm-hmm. We got too many pieces that are doing the same thing, or you got too many pieces in E or whatever.
Right.
So as far as who you're commissioning now, who are you working on?
Well, actually, on Friday, we just premiered this piece by Ron Pearl, who he was in a duo with Adam's former teacher, Julian Gray, for a really long time.
Yeah, was he a teacher there too at St.
He John's teaches somewhere else. I think Loyola is in the school. So Adam found that piece because he was just kind of poking on Ron's website, and then found one piece called, it's titled Fast. And so we decided to try that piece. It's fast. It is. It's really fun though. And
is it difficult, or is it fast and well written?
It's well written. It's absolutely well written.
Falls under the hand.
Right. It's really a great way to use two guitars. It's also like fairly tonal, and audiences don't get, you know, perturbed by it.
Right.
Yeah. It's kind of long. It's like maybe 8 or 9 minutes. So it takes some, you know, mental stamina. It's
8 or 9 minutes of a fast piece.
Yeah.
Wow, that's kind of, pretty
there
cool.
Are, there are moments that
I'm
are
really
a
sorry
slower.
I missed that. I'm going to have to look
that
up.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. I mean, we're hoping to record that. Just haven't gotten to it yet. Although, that one we did make a video of it, so you can find it.
Oh, that's cool.
So then Adam reached back out to Ron and was like, you know, it'd be great to have more of your stuff. Like, what else can we play of yours? And then he agreed to just write a piece for us. And so that piece, the new one, is called A Clear Quiet Night, and it pairs with Fast really well. So,
oh my God, great.
We're doing it as a set, those two pieces. And it kind of goes right into one to another.
Oh, that'll be so much fun. That's so good that he's doing it that way.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
what
so
a
they're
sweetheart.
A good contrast. Clear Quiet Night's really spacious, really kind of meditative, and it has this like ostinato line that I play in my part that is, I don't know, feels kind of like reflective of something cyclical.
I can't remember who you played a lot of. Who did you play a lot of? You played Brouwer.
Oh, on Friday Friday we played the Brouwer Sonata.
I wasn't there on Friday. Oh. I'm going to be honest with people. They know I'm just the biggest idiot about these things. I'm like, I'm tired. So we met before all this. We were in this. If you listen to Rupert's episode, which is episode 2, and your episode, I believe, 99.
Oh, boy. Awesome.
Isn't there? So I'm sure Rupert will listen to this, but he knows about the story. But we were you, me, Matt Rohde.
Yeah.
And Rupert Boyd were all doing the conservatory concert.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they do it anymore. Because I think it got a pain in the ass for the professors. They were like, they had to pick one person in the grad programs, which, you know, they're all master's degrees here, so people are there for 2 years.
Yeah.
They had to pick one person. It's to the detriment of the entire program because everybody else is sitting there going, why, you know, you can cause trouble.
Uh-huh.
I think.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to do that every year. Like, yeah. Oh, you are the one. Yeah. You know? But they did. They picked one from all the conservatories.
Yeah.
You were from Juilliard.
Uh-huh.
First of all, how'd you like Juilliard? Do you love it?
It was intense.
It was intense.
I'll be honest.
It was intense. What was intense about it?
Well, you know, I mean, I've played guitar since I was 5 years old.
Yeah.
So I grew up, I started guitar on the Suzuki method, straight classical, just played my entire life, and got to a point where I was like, I love guitar, but it's like a hobby, you know? Yeah. I'm going to do something else. I wanted to, like, be a lawyer or something.
Sure.
Like that. But, you know, but that was just more, it was sort of my parents' influence, you know, wanted me to do something practical. And then by the time I got to Juilliard, which was a master's degree, not even undergrad, I just, like, I didn't really know how to work, you know? I didn't treat guitar as work. I treated it like a hobby. Just like, oh, you just take it out and you play it. And you just, whatever you feel like playing, like interpretation-wise, you just play a piece the way that you want to. And I didn't have a reason in my head for how to form.
Where did you go to undergrad?
Columbia.
Okay.
And so
you were going then.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, like, I wasn't very serious as a guitar student. I was a history major. I spent my time, like, writing papers and reading tons of books and doing the academic stuff because I enjoyed it. I was really into U.S. history at the time and wanted to do social sciences and maybe go into public policy or go to law school.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know. There were a couple summers I did, like, these law internships, and I was so unhappy. I just was like, I cannot do this.
Like, this is going
to
be
hard. Yeah. Right. And I spent, like, all my time trying to find guitar concerts to go to. It's just, like, I had the guitar bug, you know? And I knew that this was, like, truly my passion. I just had to, I had to do something with it.
Yeah.
And so when I got to Juilliard, I was, like, kind of, I was changing course. You know, I was in a conservatory setting for the first time. And it was a very intense one where people practiced all the time. And I had never really done that. I would practice an hour if I was lucky here and there in high school. And in college, it was just like whatever I could get away with because it was so busy. I think that was just like a shock to me, just how intense people were at their craft and how not. I mean, it was social still, but it was like people would easily be in the practice room on a Friday night and just like be doing their thing.
Yeah. They would.
And I would always feel kind of.
You'd have like a friend, you'd be like, I thought we were going to hang out. And they'd be like, I just have to practice on a Friday night.
Yeah. Which I'll do respect. I mean, I will practice on a Friday night now, but I've made this conversion in my head that guitar is now my work, you know?
Right.
So it's different. It feels more like if I'm going to take it out, I want to be clear headed. I'm going to work on my score or, you know, finger something or, you know, do a drill or scales and all that.
Right.
Which doesn't mean it's not that it's not enjoyable. It's still enjoyable, but like in a different way.
Yeah, for me too.
Yeah.
It's always been that way for me too. It's always been like I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I love performing, but the practicing part, I can only do it well and effective if I'm doing it during the day like it's a job.
Yeah.
If I start to do that whole, like, oh, it's Friday night, you know, like, I'm just going to stay in and enjoy my instrument. Like, it doesn't, then the next day I'm tired of it.
Yeah. Yeah, especially if you've been teaching all day, you know.
Right.
Then
that doesn't always
like,
work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to, like, let it, you know, screw with my fun time either, you know, at this point.
That's actually a piece of great advice I heard when, I don't know, I would think I was at this festival once and Scott Tennant said something like, you know, treat your practice time like a work day, like an appointment. Like you're going to sit down, you're going to delegate this amount of time for whatever pieces you choose. Yeah. And then at night you play.
Or you know, pay your bills or you do something else.
Yeah, right.
Or you play.
You play it like it's enjoyment. But if you're going to work on the music, then you do have to be strategic about practicing.
Yeah.
And not just be like, you know, doodling around or running the piece without thinking about it, because that's not always that helpful.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then you get all messed up. Scheduling the time to do it is important and doing it every day.
Yeah.
Not making a big, giant spiritual journey out of it every time you approach the instrument either is kind of probably healthy for beginners too, because then they get let down when they don't have that feeling anymore.
Right.
Which inevitably happens.
Yeah.
So we were at this concert. So you did it. You pretty much, and then you went to Juilliard and then you got your ass handed to you a little bit.
Yeah.
As far as like
Well, Sharon is an incredible teacher. I mean, she really knows how to work, and she's so strategic about the way she practices. And so I learned a lot just from watching her process and hearing her talk about her own projects, you know. And she would just approach lessons in a really organized way. Like, okay, you're going to do this thing this week. She'd have a different colored pencil for every part of my score. And, you know, just really be detailed about what I had to do.
Yeah.
So that was really good for me. I can't say it was easy, but it was really good for me.
Yeah. Well, so you feel like that was sort of your first sort of foray into becoming a professional guitarist.
Yeah. Yeah. Completely.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's huge. And that's pretty cool that you weren't a music major for undergrad, but you still got into the master's program at Juilliard.
Yeah. Well,
but that's Matt Brody too. It was a math major, I think, at Yale or something.
Oh, I double majored actually. So I did U.S. history and I did music.
Oh, okay, great.
The music part of it was kind of an afterthought because towards the end of college, I was thinking, maybe I'll just try to finish the music major in case I want to go on to
look at that.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
But it was insane. I mean, I was cramming so many classes in the last year and I don't think I did it that well.
Yeah, you were just kind of like doing it. Well, you got a good education now. I would say you did good. Columbia, a little bit of that.
Yeah.
And then we were talking about the conservatory concert before, and I already told this story once, but, you know, there's like people probably haven't heard it before, but I don't even know if it's really a great story, but basically they had it where it was set up where they chose a composer from the school.
Yeah.
From one of the schools too. So it was four guitarists and one composer, and he got to write whatever he wanted, and then we had to play it.
Right.
Which I'm really glad they got rid of that. Yeah. No offense to whoever that guy is.
Do you remember? I don't even remember.
Way. Yeah. I don't remember. I'm sure he might still be rocking it. He might be the president of the world.
Yeah.
But I don't know who he is. I can't remember because he was really mad. But we got in there and we couldn't play the piece. But we were expected to rehearse it every weekend for like four, like set aside, like we'd bring, I don't know, it was like two, we had to rehearse it a lot.
Yeah, that sounds about right. We did probably at least four rehearsals, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had to play that, and especially me, I kept on saying, like, guys, there's no way that we're.
You were like the voice of dissent.
Oh,
like
it was so bad. And so, like, then Andy, who was the president at the time and a friend of mine, was like, hey, you got to cool it in there. You're being, you know, and I was like, I know, we'll do it. But I'm like, Andy, I'm telling you, we're going to get on stage and it's not going to happen. There's no way this piece is going to happen. It's got a different time signature, every other measure. There's four of us. Yeah. We don't know each other.
Yeah.
We've got 3 weeks to get this together. It's hard.
Yeah.
The rhythms are all over the place.
Yeah.
And it's atonal.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. It's just going to be, nobody's going to know where they are. So I heard that the guy at the end, Rupert was saying that because he was a Manhattan School of Music guy.
Oh, okay.
And you were with me. I think in the end you were like, you know, this isn't going to work. And Matt Rohde was like, it's going to work. It's no big deal. And he played well.
Yeah.
And the three of us just totally bombed it. Do you remember bombing it? Like we just,
I feel
you
like
and I
Rupert
started
saved
laughing.
The day. I remember Rupert you like remember conducting Rupert? With his head.
Oh, well, that's because he got such a big head back then with his big hair. But that's probably right. But I remember just completely us, especially you and me, just shutting down. Just saying, like, there's nothing to play. We kind of, like, laughed a little bit. Then people in the audience started laughing. And the guy just, like, stormed out, whoever the composer was.
Oh, I don't remember that.
And then I heard that he was in the... Because this is what happened. He was the... they chose a doc... A guy getting his doctorate or, like, a grad student.
Yeah.
He couldn't do it, so he gave it to his roommate.
Oh.
Who was, like, a sophomore.
Oh, wow.
Not a guitarist. So then they just, like, he just did it.
Yeah.
Didn't know how to write for the guitar.
Yeah.
And it was a total disaster.
Yeah, it was a disaster.
And then I heard that he was in the dorms that night, and he was saying, he was like, fuck Brett Williams.
Oh, geez, really?
Yeah, like, I hate that guy.
He knew your name? Aww.
I guess so. Isn't that sweet? That's a good story.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. I think it's an okay story. It's not that great. But that was, I mean, look how far.
Yeah. Since that day, since that fateful day.
We're kind of doing the exact same thing. I'm working exactly at that same school. But that's good. So you're doing good. You got it all set out there. And what you also doing work for the GFA, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the general manager. Just so that.
What does that mean?
Oh, geez. Let's see. I guess I get to do a little bit of everything. Like, I think my role is supposed to be that. Supposed to be. I should probably know what my role is. I kind of oversee that our staff are all doing what they're assigned to do in their program area. So, you know, the GFA does a lot of different things. There are education programs. There's a competition tour that happens, you know.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's
there's
right.
There's a convention. And
then there's pop-ups. There's little
there's Soundboard
annexes.
Magazine. Yeah. There's regional events. So we have a lot of different staff. They're all guitarists. They live all around the country. They're the best people. I totally love them. That's why I love the job.
Yeah, they're all kind of, I mean, you guys are all, I mean, you guys are, it's, you're getting paid, but it's also, well, I assume you're getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of these people are probably just volunteers.
I mean, we don't pay, you know.
You don't pay that much.
It's not like a crazy lucrative thing, but it
you still
is,
have to have,
it's a labor of love.
It's a labor of love.
Yeah,
right.
That's what it is. So, and I, you know, I manage the finances kind of for the organization. I keep in touch with the board and our executive team and stuff. So it's an awesome job. It's really taught me a lot about, gosh, just, you know, working with people, working with musicians,
right.
And how nonprofits survive, and
what have you learned about as far as nonprofit survival is concerned? I mean, you're like you said, Soundboard magazine. Like, how's that going?
Soundboard is actually going really well right now. We have a great editor, every issue's been on time. That's really important to our members because we're a membership based organization.
Mm-hmm.
And without our members, we can't survive. And we have some incredible sponsors, too. And, well, back to Soundboard, I guess it's a quarterly magazine. It's a combination of, you know, has some musicological sort of more academic articles to it. But it's also got current events that have happened and
reviews.
Pedagogy articles, reviews. Yeah. So I think it's an important publication for any classical guitarist
to have.
Yeah.
Yeah. That as far as the reviews are concerned, how do the reviews get reviewed? Like, a lot of people submit to Soundboard magazine and don't hear anything ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how is that being handled? Is it still just one guy doing it?
We have one main critic that sort of handles it, and recordings are usually sent to him.
Yeah.
And then he is allowed to pick and choose what he wants to review, like any critic.
Right.
You know, they should have that choice.
Yeah.
In order for it to be like a unbiased, kind of like freely written thing.
And there's not a budget to hire more critics?
No, there's not that much budget.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. That guy can't sit there and listen to
right. It's a, I'm sure he receives a lot of CDs.
A lot, yeah, for sure. And then so you're dealing with that, the magazine. You've got a lot going on, and you're doing that all via satellite out of Los Angeles,
because
they're in Austin, aren't they now? Where's Martha? Well, Martha's in LA.
No, we're sort of
you're all over the place,
all remote,
like you said.
Yeah, I work from home when I do that.
But when you mail things, you mail it to Austin.
Not anymore. Our address is actually in Southern California.
But it was in Austin.
For a little while, yeah.
Did you ever live there or no?
No, no.
How was that? Who was in Austin?
We had a former executive director who was based in Texas for a couple of years.
Was it Brian Head?
No.
Brian Head's down south too.
No, Brian is our artistic director.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
What does he do? Does he choose who plays in the festival?
No, we have a committee that does that, but
oh my gosh,
Brian kind of has his opinion in on anything that's, you know, artistic related, in terms of, you know, the competition has a set piece that is done every year, and really any major decisions he is a part of.
Right.
Yeah.
And you said there's an executive board that makes the final decisions about most of the stuff, about budget planning.
Right.
And I'm just asking because as we talk about this, I'm understanding how important this is. You know, this is the institution. This is something where a lot of the money is getting funneled into this institution from the fans of the instrument. So it's sort of like, it's very important. I think it's, you know, because that's where people are, that's where the resources are being put. You know what I mean? Almost like Lincoln Center for guitarists.
Wow, that's a big compliment.
Well, don't you think so?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, so it's
I've never thought about it that way.
Well, with great power comes great responsibility.
Oh, right. Yes.
Right. So I think what we're gonna do is we're gonna give more money to the people that can review, so we can get more albums reviewed.
Okay. Let's sounds do it. Good. Yes.
Are you gonna do that?
Sounds good.
You're gonna present that to the board? How many people are on the board? This is cool. This is like a little inside look. I've never gotten this. I've always wanted to have Martha on the show. Yeah.
Well, we have like 19 board members.
Oh,
but they're
my
all
gosh.
They're all put on different committees, you know. Mm. So
yeah, you got like Adam Holzman as one. Yeah.
Not right now, but okay. I think he has been perhaps in the past. They're all in different committees and so they'll kind of weigh in on things according to their area of specialization.
And is it usually competition winners are a big part of that conglomerate?
No, it's really, I mean, right now our board is made up of a lot of guitarists, but we'd love for that to expand to, you know, business people or, you know, anybody that supports the arts.
Right.
You know, who loves classical guitar but also does something else. We have a couple of those on the board.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. But it would be great to have more.
Yeah, because then
you really get the reach beyond just the guitar community, and that's important for a lot of reasons, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's important for people to be talking about us that aren't us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you get when you get that. You don't necessarily, they might not do anything genius, but they're at least going to be like, I'm part of this. I'm also, you know, part of a greater philanthropic network.
Right, exactly.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, I'm into it.
Cool.
Is there any, so as far as, you know, as far as anything else, is there anything else that you'd like to talk about? What about you? Is that good?
Do you sure.
Feel, you feel pretty? We kind of flew all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. We did.
We went all over the place.
Yeah.
You got two kids, 4 and 6.
Uh-huh.
Are they going to do guitar or no?
It's funny. You know, I tried to push it on my older daughter. And I was like, you know, guitar. And she just never wanted to do it. She was not into it. And so I let her pick an instrument. She chose the violin. I was like, no. But now, you know, she's super into it. And so
that's good.
I love supporting her that way. And so I'm a Suzuki violin mom now. Like, I sit on in the lessons, and I've learned about bow hold and, you know, how to hold the instrument and all that, so I can help her practice. And so it's a real commitment.
And she lets you help her practice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. And then my little one, who's 4, I didn't push anything because I was like, okay, I can't do that again. I'm not going to make her even play an instrument if she doesn't want to.
Right.
And then it turns out she's like, I want to play guitar. So, you know, she'll be like, Mommy, can you please teach me guitar? And my heart will just like melt into this puddle. Yeah.
That's
so we're doing a little bit. Yeah.
The two of them playing together. That'll be fun.
Yeah, I hope so.
Oh my gosh, that'll be really cool. Does she have a guitar? What kind of guitar does a 4-year-old have?
A quarter size guitar. That actually one of my students like left for me after.
Like a little Yamaha or something?
It's actually better than a Yamaha. It's like a Dieter Hopf. We used to have a source that imported them for us for all of our students in the Pasadena area.
Uh-huh.
And that was the brand that was, it's a really well constructed small instrument. So.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on this.
Thank you.
It sounds like you've got a whole system. And you're still playing on top of all of this.
Yeah. I love to play. I can't not play.
Yeah, I'm figuring that out too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tried over the last year to kind of go like, okay, you're 40. It's time to figure out what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is it. This is kind of what I guess this is all I do. I don't really.
Well,
I can't
it's
really
a lot.
Do
it sounds like
I try.
A lot for you too.
It seems like a lot, but I, you know, this is it.
Yeah.
I can't really do all the other. I can't do like just a job.
Uh huh.
I might start bartending for a little bit of money. Just
really?
A little bit.
You'd be a good bartender.
I think I'd be an okay bartender.
Yeah.
I should definitely cut back on the drinking if I'm going to do that. All right. Well, it was wonderful seeing you again.
You too, Brett.
All right. Thanks for coming on, Connie. All right, guys, that does it for my time with Connie. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope I didn't mess it up too badly. This is Rubato
Flexible by Del Kavanaugh off of the album. What album? What album are we talking about there? The Woman's Voice. Women composers performed by none other than the irreplaceable Connie Shoup. All right, let's go ahead and let's get over to BrettWilliamsMusic.com and become a member. I'm not going to stop talking about that. It's just part of the way things should be. I'm sorry it's not the old model where you can go into the store and you can buy this. But luckily, this is easily accessible. But, you know, becoming a member really, I don't know. If it takes off, maybe I won't have to make sure the food orders get to the tables on time. You know what I'm saying, folks? 41 years old, it would be nice to do something for a living. BrettWilliamsMusic.com. Become a member. $5 a month, okay? I'll see you guys next time. Thank you.